So in place of our usual opening Morim Machshava, Mirchem, we will continue with the Rambam's Hagdama LeMishnah and the history of Halacha, Nevuah and Machlokes next week, next Monday, Mirchem. But this morning is Shavas B'Tamuz. This morning is the first day of the 3 weeks. I wanted to share with you a remarkable story. It appears in Maseches Bava Kamma. I imagine some of you have learned Perek HaKonos in the past. So let's look at this story either for the first time, or let's look at it again with new eyes. It is among the stories that happened historically during the time of the Amoraim, during the period of the Gemara. They record in the Talmud Bavli. It might be one of the most difficult to understand at first glance. It starts at the very bottom of here we are above a common and testament Aleph. The last two words, Eliezer Zeira. Ari, I apologize if I've shared this with you in the past, but I hope it will bear repeating. Eliezer Zeira, Eliezer the Small, literally. Eliezer Klein, one of the Amoraim. As we'll soon see, he was a towering Talmud Chacham. And that was his name, Eliezer Zeira, moving Talmud Beis. Havasai Masani Uchmi. He was wearing black shoes. V'koy b'shuka de Naharda, and he was standing in the marketplace of Naharda. Naharda, you know, is one of a city in Bavel, a city in Iraq, with one of the most significant Jewish populations during the period of Amoraim, one of the most significant yeshivas. And he's standing in public wearing black shoes. That doesn't necessarily strike us as being a very exceptional thing to do, but Rashi says that b'tkufas Amoraim, in that time and place, Masani Uchmi, black shoes were minag avelim. That's what someone wore when they were in mourning. The way in general Western culture, sometimes wearing a black ribbon or wearing black in other ways might be a sign of avelus. So in Jewish culture, B'tkufas Amoraim, wearing black shoes was a sign of avelus. Baruch Hashem, he had not lost any relatives. His family was whole. And he's standing out in a public display of avelus. So the Gemara describes a most remarkable reaction. Ashkechu devei Resh Galusa, the staff of the Resh Galusa found him. Resh Galusa was a Jew. It was a Jewish position. He was literally Rosh HaGola. He was the head of the diaspora, the head of the exile. He was the political leader of the Jews in Bavel. You see over the course of the Tkufas Amoraim, you see different stories of Resh Galusa at different places in the Talmud Bavli. The Resh Galusa sometimes was a Talmud Chacham, and sometimes was not. Sometimes was at least sympathetic to Halacha, and sometimes was less so. At this point in time, the Resh Galusa was very, 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 apparently exquisitely careful about Halacha and about Midos. So much so that the following conversation ensues. The Resh Galusa's staff, the Resh Galusa's police, as it were, find Eliezer Zeira, this Jew, standing in the street in a public display of avelus. And they say, Maishna Haini Masani. What's up with these shoes? Are you okay? Did you lose someone? He says, no. Baruch Hashem, his family's whole, everyone's healthy. So what's with the sign of avelus? Amar lahu dekam ma'avilna Yerushalayim. I'm expressing my avelus over Yerushalayim. Today certainly seems like an appropriate thing to do. Amrule, they say to him, these Jewish police, the Devei Resh Galusa, say to Eliezer Zeira, At chashivis l'sabuli Yerushalayim? You think that you're chashiv enough, that you're a significant enough person that you can mourn over Yerushalayim? Savor yu'arahava. They thought that he was being arrogant. They thought he was being a balgaiva, as though he is entitled to have avelus over Yerushalayim. Again, as we're moving through this Haggadah, we might be asking ourselves, you know, we don't find it particularly exceptional to be zavel Yerushalayim. Isn't that what we're all doing today? They said, you're a balgaiva. So that's already surprising. And then the story takes a whole other turn. Asiyu v'chavshua. They actually arrested him and jailed him for the crime of Gaiva. Fascinating. As I told you before, at this point, the Bei Resh Galusa in this era was not only concerned with the halachic story with Midos. They jailed him for Gaiva. The story keeps unfolding. We're going to return in a moment to this point. So he says, no, Amar Lahu Gava Rabbana. I'm a big Talmud Chacham. I'm a big tzaddik. You shouldn't jail me. Now, we're not sure why he's being jailed for being arrogant. We're not sure why it's arrogant to be Mesavu Yerushalayim. And we never thought that it's arrogant to read Kinnas on Tisha B'Av. And we're not sure why someone is being put in prison for the crime of arrogance. But if he is being arrested for arrogance, you know, the third question is saying, no, I'm a big Talmud Chacham, Gavur Rabbana, I'm a big tzaddik. It doesn't necessarily seem like the way to fight an accusation of arrogance. No, I'm not arrogant, I'm a big Talmud Chacham. What's going on? Amrule, so they say to him, and they don't say, now you expect him to say, you're definitely arrogant. Who are you to tell us you're a Talmud Chacham? But their response and says, well, Menaya Dinan, prove it. How are we supposed to know you're a big Talmud Chacham? Maybe you're just a poser. Maybe you're just faking. Maybe you're not really a big Talmud Chacham. Apparently, if you'd be a big Talmud Chacham, they will let you off the hook. But prove it. So Amar Lahu, he says, let's have a fair. O atun bu'u minoi milsa, o anai boi minaychu milsa. You could ask me a shayla, and you'll see how I respond, or ask you a shayla. Let's talk in learning. As an aside, as someone had raised the other day, we do have to have some sort of formal assessment of this year, especially if this is a credit-bearing course. Okay, so it's not happening today, worry not. We'll have to talk next week about some sort of system of oral, written, fahers, whatever it is. But again, the idea of having a faher, the Gemara and Bava Kama and Testament base. But again, this is like, the whole story is puzzle upon puzzle, a mystery wrapped in an enigma. What does this mean? It's gaiva to be Mesabu Yerushalayim. Gaiva for which he's jailed, but the solution to that gaiva is, no, I'm a Talmud Chacham. I'm a great tzaddik, to which their only response is, well, establish that, prove it. So they have a conversation learning, and that conversation happens to be relevant to the larger context in Bava Kama, which is why this story is quoted in Bava Kama in the first place. Some of the details of paying for Nezek, and then ultimately they say, okay, they let him off. Did he give the right answer? Did he not give the right answer? Finally, they check. They sent to Adam or Shmuel, who says right before the Tudat, Shapur Karmeluchu B'Shishim, he gave the right answer, V'Shav Kuhu. So then they release him. Itake is proven to be a Talmud Chacham of note. So he gets off the hook. What does this mean? What does any of this mean? Beginning with the most basic question, which is, what's wrong with being Mesabel over Yerushalayim? Aren't we all doing that right now? Today inaugurates 3 weeks, or if you're one of those people who likes to be very numerically precise, 22 days of Aveiros Yerushalayim. Right, 3 weeks from today will be Tisha B'Av. Navi Zechariah tells us that La'asad Limos HaMashiach, and other Nevi'im speak to this as well, Limos HaMashiach, these days will be transformed into days of Simcha. Halavai, that should happen over the next 3 weeks. If we're not zocha to the completion of the process of Geula over the next 3 weeks, so we anticipate 22 days of Aveilus beginning today, 22 and a half, if you really want to be technical, and beginning today and climaxing on Tisha B'Av and continue a little bit into the 10th of Av. Are we claiming to all be great Talmid Chachamim? No. Are we By Gaiva as a result? Doesn't seem like it. This is appropriate. This is expected. Again, Ashkenazim start their Avelos over the Mikdash earlier than Sfardim, who reserve it more for the days leading up to Tisha B'Av. But those details are irrelevant. It's clear from the Mishnayos and Maseches Tanis and the Sugyas and on through Shulchan Aruch, both Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, Ashkenazim and Sfardim alike, that public Avelos over, and you know, broad-based avails for the Churban is not only acceptable but mandated. So what does the Gemara mean? It's the Gemara seems to be saying that avails for the Churban is appropriate if you're a big Talmud Chacham, but not otherwise. So when he said when he was being public in Mizrach Yerushalayim, that was a statement that I'm a person of measure, I'm a person of stature, and this is appropriate. And they said, that's arrogance. You're stepping out of line. And when they discovered, no, he really is a Talmud Chacham, they said, okay, so what you were doing was appropriate. But again, but why? Why? It's clear in Shulchan Aruch, it's clear to us today, practically, that Vez of Yerushalayim is for everybody. So Reb Chaim Friedlander, one of the great Bali Machshav of the late 20th century, he was Mashkiach for many years in Yeshivat HaNegev. He was Mashkiach for many, many years in Panavision and Bnei Brak. And he wrote a series of Svarim, Sifsei Chaim, on very, 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 very enjoyable, satisfying essays on Machshava. The first three volumes, which are the most famous ones, are on the Yamim Tovim, throughout the cycle of the year. I can't call Tisha B'av Yom Tov exactly, but different times of the year, and then he ends with Shabbos. And then beyond that, beyond those first three volumes, there are many volumes published on Chumash, on Midos, and Emunah, and all sorts of topics. In his third volume, when he deals with Tisha B'av, so he has an essay actually dedicated to this Gemara. The title of the essay is that line that they asked Eliezer Zeira, At Chashivas L'Sabu Yushalayim? You think you're Chashav enough to Misabu Yushalayim? And he says, what? What's going on? What's going on? Now, many of us may not feel Avil Yerushalayim. We may be just going through the motions. It may just be uncomfortable. But what are we supposed to make of this Gemara? And could this Gemara maybe even help us deal with, I'm just going through the motions, I'm not really feeling it? See, he makes the following suggestion. I'll give a different mashal. I think everyone right now is in a big city, or at least in suburbia, so you probably have pretty good cell reception. So let's say mid-August you decide to go with your families to Banff, or to the American Rockies, or maybe camping somewhere closer. You get out somewhere a little more rugged. So there may be poor cell reception. When you're away from urban centers, sometimes the cell phone reception is a little bit weak. Certainly if you've been zocha to be in Beit Meir, so you know what I mean. You get away from the big cities, in a more rugged place, and the cell phone reception is a little more spotty, shall we say. So you're on the phone with someone, and they suddenly, the conversation is getting a little complicated, it's getting a little tender. I shouldn't say tender, but again, a little edgy, and suddenly there's a click and you lose the other person. Right? So you're not sure if you said something insensitive and it was insulting, he or she dropped you, or they just got cut off. Right? So if you're out in backcountry, somewhere rugged, and the call drops in the middle, there may just be bad reception. But if you're in an area with crystal clear reception, and then suddenly you got dropped, so then chances are that was an intentional, someone chose to step away from the phone. All right, let's talk about listening to the radio, for those who still have actual radios, at least in your car. Right? So you tune to your favorite station, news, talk, what have you. You tune to your favorite station and it's silent. What does that mean? So it depends. Right? So if you're in the car on a road trip and you're 2-3 hours away from hometown, it may be that you're just out of reception. You're not able to pick up that your favorite station. But if you're in the middle of the city and there's crystal clear reception and you tune to your favorite station and there's nothing, that means that they're not broadcasting. That means that the station is shut down. At least temporarily. So Chaim Friedlander suggests that he doesn't give exactly this mashal, but that the concept behind that is the concept that's being communicated to us by this Gemara and Bava Kamma. All year long, you need to be a person of great measure to be misabel over Yerushalayim. Because to be misabel Yerushalayim means to appreciate what we're missing. To recognize that our lives, that there's a hole, There's a gap. There's something spiritually missing from my life because I don't have Beis HaMikdash. I'm somehow less connected with the Ribbono Shalom because of a lack of Beis HaMikdash. So you have to have good reception to notice that something is not broadcasting. He says all year long, you have to be a person of great, you have to be a Jew of great measure. You have to be a Jew of great spiritual sophistication and development to notice, you know, I could be more plugged into Ribbono Shalom if only there was a Beis HaMikdash. During these three weeks, we're ki'ilu closer to the radio station. During these 3 weeks, we're in a place with good reception, and we can notice what isn't broadcasting. You know, there's a line they quote from. I believe, from that Rizal. I believe Rizal Salanter is said to have quoted from that Rizal. There's a connection between Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. I'm sorry, not that Rizal. There's a line they quote from Yisrael Salanter that there's something similar about the Avodah of Yom Kippur and the Avodah of Tisha B'Av, which at first seems odd. I mean, they're both fast days. They are the 2 days on the calendar when we have a full 24 or 25-hour fast with all of the other Shari Nuyim, and not bathing and so on, not wearing leather shoes and so on and so forth. They seem like such radically different days. Tisha B'Av is a day where you feel so pushed down. And Yom Kippur, it's a fast day, but it's an exalted fast day. It's a day of feeling exceptional, exquisite closeness with Ribbono Shalom. Chai Freelander quotes this idea, though, from this equation from Rizal Salanter. And he said that's what's going on here. That the, you know, different times of the year have different spiritual climates. And just like different parts of the world have different physical climates, different parts of the world lend themselves to different flora and fauna. Right? Polar bears don't thrive in Memphis, and nor do palm trees grow well in Toronto. Right? Now, I'm not implying that polar bears live in Toronto either. Right? But obviously, every place on the globe has its own climate and lends itself to particular plants and animals, lends itself to particular flora and fauna. So the Sefer HaKuzari Levi writes in the Sefer HaKuzari that it's not only true on a physical level, on a spiritual level also. Different places in the world have different spiritual climates that lend themselves more easily to different spiritual pursuits. And he speaks specifically about the unique spiritual climate of Eretz Yisrael. And there's such an idea, not only in terms of different places on the globe, but also different, temporally speaking, in terms of time, different spots on the calendar. And when we talk about a certain period of time as mesugal for something, what that means, in simple terms, is that the spiritual climate of that time of the year, it lends itself to this sort of growth. There's a certain type of growth in Emunah that's more easy, that one can perhaps do any time of the year, but more easily accessible Pesach time. The certain type of growth is more easily accessible Shavuos time, and so on and so forth. So through these weeks that begin today and that climax in Tisha B'Av also have a spiritual climate. You know, the Navi Zechariah doesn't just say that La'achar Bias HaMashiach, Tisha B'Av and Shavuos B'Tammuz will stop being days of mourning. He says there'll be Yamim Tovim, L'Sasson L'Simcha. It sounds like there'll be not just all year long will be celebratory. It sounds like there'd be something particularly celebratory about these Tanios, which on the face of it is strange. Okay, so we're no longer fasting. When Mashiach will come, so we'll no longer be sad on Shivas B'Tammuz, on Tisha B'Av, Asara B'Tevis, and some Gedalia. But why would we be more happy? So there could be different approaches, but perhaps it's because there is a unique spiritual power. There is a unique spiritual climate to these days, and there is actually a greater closeness to Ribbono Shel Olam, Chaim Fleener suggests, the sort of closeness that allows us to notice what we're missing. We're in a place of good reception, good not radio reception, but good not cell reception, but good spiritual reception. that these times of Avelis are times when, ironically, we're more tuned into Ribono Shel Olam. There's access to greater spirituality, to greater closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, such that we could notice what's missing without a Beis HaMikdash. Such that we could notice more keenly, beginning today, what are we missing by the world not being in an ideal state? We're more keenly aware of that. Yesterday, last week, last month, one would have had to have been an unusual tzaddik to really meaningfully be misabel of Yerushalayim, such that the Gemara said Eliezer Ze'ira was jailed for the crime of Gaiva, because in the middle of, I don't know, Chodesh Adar, Chodesh Sivan, Chodesh Cheshvan, whenever it was, he was being misabel of Yerushalayim, something that any other time of the year is not meaningful unless one is a person of unusual spiritual stature. But the climate that begins today and that runs for 22 days is a time of greater kirvas elokim, a time when we can notice, when it's easier to connect to Ribono Shel Olam in a way that we can also notice what's missing. That's why perhaps the Rambam speaks vividly in the fifth parak of Hilchos Tanios, when he discusses the Tanios, the Avelis over the Mikdash. He speaks about it as being a time that meant to be focused on tshuva. It's not meant to be, solely retrospective. It's not just looking back at the past and thinking about, what we're missing. That certainly is a piece of it. But it's also meant to be a time for present and future looking, prospective tshuva, to notice what we're missing. It's a time when we're more keenly aware of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or more keenly aware of how much there still is to do in terms of building the Kesher of the Ribono Shel Olam. So those are, Rambam talks based on the Gemara about Tanyos being a time for Cheshbon Nefesh. So over the next hour and change, we're going to be focused on learning. And beyond that, over the course of the balance of today, and the learning itself will hopefully be both the mitzvah of Talmud Torah per se, and also attune us more to our relationship with Ribono Shel Olam, which, as we've seen, is what all of Tefillin is about. And over the course of the afternoon, it would be particularly appropriate to find some time, a couple of minutes, to do some sort of cheshbon nefesh, and to think about ways in which I can meaningfully improve. Not chumras, not something off the beaten track, just standard Yadus 101, the basic expectations that Kadosh Baruch Hu has of me, in terms of midos, in terms of mitzvahs, in terms of so on and so forth, in terms of the ABCs of Yadus. What are some things that I'm doing well and that I should take pride in, and what are some things that need to be improved, and what's a practical plan for how I could improve things over the next couple of weeks? And that's ultimately realizing the power and the purpose of Tisha B'Av, of Shiva Asar Tamas, and the 3 weeks as a whole. These are definitely some of the ideas. Hopefully they help to frame Shiva Asar Tamas and 3 weeks as a whole in a meaningful and productive way.